The Pacific Group is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all members of the community are welcome to attend. The single most important aspect of AA recovery, however, is the principle of one alcoholic relating to another alcoholic. Therefore, only alcoholics actually participate in our meetings. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful to you to contact an anonymous organization that more specifically deals with your addiction. In any case, we hope that you learn what you learn here may be helpful to you and to your recovery and our understanding. Good evening. My name is Abria, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Pacific Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Out of our program is laid out in a portion of chapter five. Oh, sorry. The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers followed by a main speaker. Speakers, please note you will be given a 5-minute and a 1-minute reminder when it is time to wrap up your talk. Our first 10-minute speaker tonight is Stephanie A.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Hi, everybody. My name is Stephanie, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you so much, Marty, for asking me to share. It's an honor, and I'd like to also welcome the newcomer tonight. My sobriety date is July 7th, 2014, and I have a sponsor. Her name is Rose I. And then I also have been able to sponsor women as well, and sponsoring a pretty incredible lady who's on here tonight as well. I'm just going to go ahead and get started. You know, when I got on Zoom this evening, it was crazy because, you know, I saw all these people smiling. So everybody's smiling, everyone's saying hi, and, you know, I could see that there was this sense of community. I could see that there was faces, you know, just filled with gratitude and joy and happiness. There was laughter and people were excited to be here. And that's what I love. That's one of the things that I love about AA today, because my life wasn't like that. You know, my life didn't look anything like that, didn't feel anything like that. There was something, you know, really, really wrong on the inside of me as a person. There was also, you know, something very disturbing going on in my life, in my home, at work. It was all around me. And, you know, it was really frightening to me, because I had no control over it and I didn't know what was going on. And I had lots of friends, but, you know, over a period of time, that group, that circle, became really, really small, very fast. And, you know, I guess I'm just going to go ahead and start by saying, you know, I was born in Texas. I was raised, you know, unfortunately in a dysfunctional home. You know, my parents both drank, and, you know, I'm not going to say they were raging alcoholics or anything like that, but, they drank a lot.
Stephanie, we lost your audio. If you can hear me, we've lost your audio.
Stephanie, I think it's your internet connection, if you can hear us.
Hold on one sec. Let's see if we can get her back. Hold on one second. There she is. All right, you can unmute yourself now, Stephanie.
Okay. Okay, sorry. As I was saying, you know, when I was 4 years old, there was something that was going on, you know, again in my house. And I heard this big, you know, bang, and then I heard a crash. And I was just so scared. And there was this rush of, like, you know, pure fear that I was filled with. And, you know, what had happened was, you know, this guy followed my dad to our home. And he's banging on our door, and he's like, you know, I want you to stop hanging out with my wife, you know, basically was what happened. That's what was going on. And, you know, it was just drama, but I fed into that. I fed into that energy and that fear and that, that feeling that I got, that search that I got. And I would have to say that throughout my life, that was the feeling that I chased, like, my entire life. And, you know, alcohol and drugs did that for me. That was my solution for everything. That was my solution, you know, in high school, when I couldn't, you know, when I couldn't get along with people, when I couldn't fit in, I felt different. I didn't feel like I fit in. And, you know, and that was just my fear. And then, you know, I went to college for a couple years, and I met somebody, and we moved out here to California, and we got married and had kids and the whole nine yards. And, you know, I'd like to say that it was a marriage, you know, and happily ever after, but it wasn't. You know, there was something still terribly wrong with me on the inside, and I didn't know what that was still. But, you know, what they say, that this disease is progressive, and that's what was happening, was that, you know, I've been in California now for, you know, almost 25 years. And during that period of time before I got sober, my life was just a series of, you know, events where I'd have a job and I wouldn't have a job. And, you know, I couldn't hold a relationship down. I couldn't hold, you know, my family together. I couldn't keep a job, and financially speaking, you know, my finances were just a mess. I was a disaster. And so, you know, it came down to, when I moved here to Burbank, and I'll never forget when I moved into this particular apartment, I was just getting ready to get sober. And I remember being here, and my son didn't want anything to do with me. My daughter had moved to Chicago because she didn't want anything to do with me, and because she was probably doing other stuff. But, you know, the bottom line was that my life was a mess, and I was creating, you know, a path of destruction for, you know, everybody around me. And it wasn't fair to them, and they didn't want to be around me anymore. And I had to decide, you know, what am I going to do? You know, how am I going to change my life? And I realized, I can't change it on my own. I can't do this by myself, but I need to start somewhere. And just so happened, the church that I started going to had an outpatient program, and I went through that. And I went through that for like 6 months, and I got sober. It was the scariest thing in the world. After I got sober, I thought, well, I graduated. I'm out of this class now. Everything's great. And, what do? You know? And so for about 2 years, I stayed dry. And, you know, I would go to their class every Sunday, but it wasn't anything like the way that AA is today. And, you know, and then I met a gentleman who's actually online. Most of you know him. His name is Ruben. And he, you know, he and I started dating, and he, you know, became part of my life. And I had no idea that he was in recovery. Neither one of us knew. And, you know, his life looked different, you know, and I didn't know what it was, but at first I really didn't want to go to AA. He's like, well, maybe you should try it. And I was like, yeah, well, I'm sure there's something else online that I could do. And there wasn't, there was nothing else. And so I took the plunge. I said, you know, I need to do something different. I feel like there's just something up here to my neck, and I need something that's going to help me. And so, you know, I came into these doors. I came to PG. PG was the first place I went to. And you guys scared the living daylights out of me because there's so many of you. I mean, even tonight, there's like over 800 people online and I'm flipping out. But, you know, what I saw was a group of people who have structure, a structure that I was craving in my life that I needed so desperately. And, you know, what you all have taught me in these rooms is that, you know, there's 12, we have steps in our program and we have community and we have commitments and, you know, and we're held accountable, right? We show up, and we give our everything to each other and to, the newcomer. And that's what it's about. And, like I said, I was scared. So for those of you who are new, you know, it's a scary place to be, but please keep coming back because it works. And, you know, you find your tribe, you find the people that, you know, that you can do this program with, that you can do life with. And I'll tell you, you know, I don't know where I'd be today without my sponsor. I told her the other day, I said, you know, I'm so grateful that you're my sponsor. I'm so grateful that I get to actually call you and tell you what's going on in my life. And, you know, I've had two sponsors, and they both, you know, are amazing. It wouldn't be fair not to, you know, not to mention that, but you know, this program has so many benefits. The gratitude that I feel just, you know, with how my higher power has changed my life today is my circle has gotten so much bigger. You know, my daughter, I get to talk to her like every day. She FaceTimes me. My son, you know, he lives with me, and during COVID, I was quarantined with Ruben, and now I'm back here in Burbank. And you know, he's like, hey, you know, what do you want to do tonight? And you know, where do you want to go? And you know, and he's in my life, and my family is back in my life again. And you know, and then I have a bigger family, and that family is part of Ruben. You know, Ruben is in a big part of my life today. I never knew that I could have feelings for another man the way that I do. I'm totally and completely in love with him and with his family. And, you know, I'll end with this. Each and every one of you, I've seen you in these rooms. You have shown up when I needed you most, and you probably don't even know it, but without these rooms, and without your example, I wouldn't be where I'm at today. And like I said, if you are new, get a sponsor, get a big book, and keep coming back to these meetings because the program works. And thanks again for letting me share.
Thank you, Stephanie. Our second 10-minute speaker is Joe H.
Hi, my name is Joe and I'm alcoholic. And my sober date is May 1st, 2019. Paul J is my sponsor. Mark D is my grand sponsor. And Pacific Group is my home group. Marty, thank you so much for letting me be here tonight. It's an honor and a privilege for me being here, being a newbie. Thank you so much. I want to say when I started drinking when I was 9. I came within a alcoholic home. I didn't even know at that time that it was an alcoholic home. I thought it was like every day. I picked up the drink. I picked up a Jack Daniels when I was 9 years old, and I didn't put it down after that. I loved it. It was an abusive home. My father was an alcoholic. He was always getting on me and stuff. I just, every time there was a bad situation, I would just pick up a bottle and start drinking and to escape that emotions and stuff. And then when I got into junior high, I got into more stuff. started hurting myself more, started taking like different stuff just to not to feel the pain that I was feeling. Then around when I was 11, I did my first try to kill myself the first time. And then they took, and I continued just to not to feel the pain and continue drinking. Then I was about 14 years old. My parents died in a drunk driver car accident. And that just took me to a whole little level. I didn't give a nothing about any other one either. People, I just thought about myself and just continued drinking. But I found that people I was drinking because I was not the person they think I was. Then when I got into high school, I kind of like tried to trick them like I could be a normal person like everybody else, but have that dark side like that they didn't know. I got straight A's in high school. I was on the football team. I was on the soccer team. I was on the swim team. I was in band. I was just being a number with straight A's, but I was drinking using drugs. Then one time I was in 11th grade, I got hurt in football. Someone took out my knee and I couldn't play. That took me into a depression. I continued to drink. I continued to use drugs. I can party all the time, but I was still good in high school. Till I finished high school, I was straight A student, but I was still like being a functional excited. I was still drinking and using. But I got into, then after that, I got into UCLA. And I got into UCLA, but that didn't stop me from right there. I still was using. And then my second semester of UCLA, I got into a, I thought I was fine. I was, me and my buddy was driving home from this party, and I took a sharp turn and the car flipped over and he died instantly, and I was unconscious for 6 months. That didn't stop. When I woke up, when I heard, that didn't stop me. I left the hospital, got my money from UCLA, and I started traveling the world. I went from Australia to Japan to New Zealand, to England, to Paris, to everywhere I could think of, just to escape and drinking and partying. Just didn't care. I didn't care when my grandparents died. I didn't care when my sisters were calling me. I didn't care with anything. I was just continuing to drink just to escape, because I was not too focused on whoever I was hurting. I was just focusing on myself and just trying to have a good time. And then when the money ran out, I came back to LA. Didn't even know where I was going. I just like started living on the streets. Start drinking, using drugs, start telling myself just to get by. And then I just met this chick, and she said, "Oh, I got this new place in Palmdale. Like, you can go there, we can live there. It's good." So there I got, it was more mental, more mental stuff. I continued drinking, and then it finally got too much, and then I just left. I forget about her, and then I just came into LA, back to LA with actually to the Valley with a friend that I met at a place that we're supposed to get sober, but I didn't get sober. I didn't care. That wasn't the first time. I was still using and drinking. And then this one day he told me like, "Well, you're drinking too much. You're going to go to either back, you're going to either leave out of the street, or you're going to go like live in a sober house, sober living." So like I was mad and I didn't care, but I went to go live at the sober. That's where I met my sponsor, Paul J. I was so mad at everybody for 2 straight months that I didn't care, that I didn't want anyone talking to me. Then I started, like, after things that I got out of my head, I started, like, throwing myself. Wednesday night, he was my first meeting, and then afterwards, I got start throwing myself in the middle of the group with my sponsor. He's got threw me through the steps. I started in my first three months, I got speaking on my panel with my sponsor and grand sponsor. Then I started having sponsees. And then I started having, started going to watches, going to start doing the yard, started having friends. I had my road dogs. Then I started having a protective, back to life to normal, but there was some stuff up and downs. My emotionals were coming out. I was trying to get everything settled. And then by the way people were showing me, by my sponsors showing me, by everybody was showing me that I could have a good life by being sober and doing the steps, I mean, doing the program for the first time, being sober for 420 days now. I got my driver license after 18 years. After 18 years, I got my driver's license back. I start working with other people just and being out there helping other people back. I'm a secretary at a Valley meeting. I went to other meetings. I go and speak. I help out. Now it's just that I am so grateful that AA was there when I didn't think I was deserving enough to be part of it. I'm glad that I have friends now. I'm glad that I have a Pacific group. I call it as a family. I am so grateful with my road dogs. I'm grateful the people that's in my life showing me the way. People that I could call every day showing that I am there if they need me. They're there if I need them. Without this group or without my road dogs, without my sponsor, without anybody, I don't think I would have survived the beginning of this year journey. And it's going to continue me going up. If I do have that bump, I know I have people to call on and help me out there. If you are new, get in the middle of everything, get a sponsor, do the steps. Call people, get yourself road dogs, because they're gonna help you through this, and we're all family, we're all here together. And thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Joe. And tonight our main speaker is my new fast friend Otis J.
Hey, am I muted? Oh, there we go. Well, good evening, everyone. My name is Otis, and I'm a grateful alcoholic. My sobriety date is March 26, 1979, and Walter T. is my sponsor, and my hum group is the Canyon Club in Laguna Beach. And it's an honor to be here tonight. I want to welcome all the newcomers. I heard him say that when I first got here, you're the most important people in the room, and I like being important, so I like that being a newcomer. But now that I've been around for a while, I'm a little resentment because I think I should be more important all the time I've been here. But the newcomers get all the love. So that's good. But welcome, newcomers. And I wasn't too nervous, and I was doing pretty good. Abby had me in the green room doing my makeup, you know, for me to go into the show. I was looking good. And then I came on, and Stephanie started talking about 300 people watching me. I went, oh, God, now I'm in real trouble. I've not been in front of 300 people in my life. I go, they're going to all know how bad I am now. And, you know, I've been coming to AA for a while, but I know when they asked me to speak, man, I was always terrified. I know I was in early recovery and my sponsor had asked me to speak. And I went, oh, man, I cannot get up there and do that because I had no story. I had heard these guys before speaker meetings and they were like awesome, man. I mean, they would say, you know, Joe would say, well, I went out. Like you heard Joe, he went out drinking. He woke up in Paris, France. I go, Joe, you was in Paris, France. Yeah, I was in France, Australia. I go, damn. And then the other girl, Bill, says, well, I went drinking and I woke up in Rio de Janeiro. I go, Rio de Janeiro. I go, God, what's happening? And I go, well, what are you guys drinking? Because I want some of it. Because I was waking up in alleyways and trash cans in the bathroom under the sink. And I go, maybe that Thunderbird, man, get me there. I need to switch up because they were drinking some magical stuff. And so I go, I got to go to AA. And I get a cheap bottle of wine. I drink it, pass out, and pee in my pants. I go, oh, this is not going to be a great story for the people in AA. So when I'm in trouble, I go talk to my mom. I go, Mom, I got to go talk to these people. Can you give me a little, you know, information on my early childhood? Because I don't remember much. So she filled me in, and I went, okay, I have a little stuff I can share about my life with these people. So here's my story, and I'm sticking to it. I'm not going to change it. This is my story. So it seems that I was born in this little, small country town, Spartanburg, South Carolina. You know, back, and this is in 1942. And when you had kids, you had them at home. You didn't go to the hospital. They call the midwife, and, you know, and they deliver the baby, and you're good to go. So my mom is only about 6 months pregnant, and she's got, you know, 2 or 3 months to go. And of course, it's the middle of the night, and it's raining, and it's cold, and it's January, and it's crazy. And my mom should have known I was going to be a difficult child and probably an alcoholic, because I decided that I wanted out. I was sick and tired of being there. I wasn't waiting the 9 months. I'm coming now. So mom says, call the midwife, the baby's coming. So they call everybody, they boil the water with all the stuff they do. They get the baby. And I arrive and they go, oh my God, he's not going to make it. I weigh 3.5 pounds. My mom says she could hold me in the palm of her hand. So they didn't have no incubators and stuff. So they just wrap you in a blanket and put you close to the fireplace, hope you stay warm, you know, and you're going to survive. So the next thing she knew that I had a problem was, I decided not to eat. And so when you only weigh 3.5 pounds, you can ill afford not to eat. So they tried the carnation milk. They got some goat milk. They tried some other stuff. Mom tried to breastfeed me. I'm not eating. So my grandfather came over and says, well, hey, Callie, let me take care of that boy because I know what to do. And she says, well, you might as well, because we've been trying everything. All the sisters been praying on me and laying on hands and all that. Ain't nothing working. I'm fading fast. So Grandpa took me over to his place and puts me in a little bassinet and sit up there. He says, you're going to be fine, son. So he gets a saucepan out, put a little milk in it and a little sugar. Then he go back on the shed porch out back. You know, you got to be down home and know about that. But he gets out this little mason jar with his Primo, I'm talking Primo, not first run, not second run, but third run corn liquor, the good stuff. He pours a little bit in the milk, he stirs it up, man, and he dips a little bit on something, and he squeezes a few drops off in my mouth. I'm like, wah, wah. I came alive to life. I tried to chew a hole. I attacked that thing, man. I sucked it dry. So my claim to fame is I was drinking liquor 3 months before I was supposed to be born. So I was the earliest drinker of all. Now, I know there's some other alcoholic up there that says he was drinking before that, but I know he's lying because I am the early drinker. But alcohol in our family was good for everything. Everybody drank. No matter what was wrong with you, you have a drink. You know, you got a headache, you take a drink. You got a toeache, take a drink. You know, you got a backache, take a drink. You know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, it was a staple in the house. You know, everybody drank. And it was just kind of normal. And so things were okay in South Carolina, but this was 1942. Then the war started in 43 when I was a year old. And so my dad moved to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, to work in the steel mills for the war effort. So then I moved into this inner city black neighborhood. And boy, I'll tell you, inner city Philadelphia, it's a little tough, especially 1950. And I was just skinny, awkward, because I was premature. I was still real skinny, funny-shaped head, protruding teeth. And the first feeling I ever felt was fear. I was not okay. I didn't fit in, and I didn't belong. And I was just trying to survive the day. And so things weren't too bad at home, but, you know, then you get to be 6 or 7, you got to go to school. My mom gave me my little, you know, 2 pennies for the milk money and your peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and off I go to school. And of course, the bullies see me coming. They go, look at the little rookie with his couple of pennies for the milk money and the peanut butter and jelly sandwich. So of course, they smack me upside the head, take my peanut butter and jelly sandwich, my two little pennies for milk money, and send me crying to the classroom. I go, life's over. I'm not okay. So I do, after that, I just tried to hide out. I would avoid situations, people. I was scared. I was even scared of girls. I mean, Stephanie would beat me up. You know, her and Aubrey, they would just beat me up and chase me home. I mean, anybody could beat me up. I was just terrified. Then I got to be 12, 13, and they had these little parties at the little school dance. And I don't know why, but at these dances, you know, all the girls were lined up on one side of the wall, you know, the gym, and then all the guys were on the other side. And to get a dance, you had to walk all the way across the floor with everyone looking at you, which was terrifying. And then you would get all the way over there and you would ask, you know, one of the ladies like Stephanie for a dance. And of course she said, no, get out of here. You had to walk all the way back across the floor with everyone looking at you going, ah, you got squared up. I was not taking the long walk of death. But then a couple of my more enterprising brothers, you know, like Joe and Thomas here, they said, hey, Otis, we got a little pint of bourbon, man. We hooked up out of our dad's liquor counter. Let's go outside and get a little drink. And I would go anywhere with anybody. So we were standing around a little circle. So they started passing the bottle around and they were taking some pretty big hits. And I go, well, man, I'm going to do the same thing they do. So the bottle came around to me. I took a big hit of alcohol and I thought I was going to die. That was the nastiest tasting stuff in the world. Warm old hickory bourbon, you know, out of a bottle is the nastiest stuff. And I thought I was going to die. I was choking, tears in the eye. And the guy says, oh, well, how is it? I'm like, oh, good, good. So they passed it around again. And so I choked down some more of it. I went, wow, I don't know why anybody drinks this stuff. So we finished the bottle off. I go back inside the dance, resume my position along the wall. And suddenly I felt this electrical fire, like an electrical shock start to go through my body. Ka-ching, ka-ching. I go, oh my God, what's going on? And I felt this electrical shock just bring me wide alert. And right about that time, my main man, James Brown, came on the machine and James was screaming, get up, you can dance. I go, Otis, you can dance. Oh my God, I was in love. I grabbed my girl, Stephanie, I put her on the floor. I go, come here, girl, you know, we're gonna party. I'm out there working with James, I'm moving and grooving. I go, Otis, you got the plan, bro. And then I start telling Stephanie how fine she was. I go, girl, you are so fine. Where have you been all my life? And she's smiling at me and stuff. I went, oh my God, I'm a lover too. Oh man, I mean, this is beyond belief. And then a big ugly guy like Joe bumped into me. I smacked him, pow. I go, Otis, you a fighter too. Oh my God. I was in love with alcohol. It took away all my problems. I was not the skinny, awkward, shy, nervous little guy. I was the baddest dude on the block. So, man, I was in love with alcohol. I go, no wonder my daddy drinks this stuff and go to jail. I would drink this and go to jail, too. And I did, you know, because, man, alcohol was in my life. I made sure I always had a way to get something to drink, you know, because that was the only time I really felt alive. So, you know, I drank my way through high school. And I did enough to pass, you know, grades. And I was a party guy, always knew where the hookup was to get stuff. And so it was great. Then I graduated high school in 1959. Now in 1959, if you were black and you couldn't sing or dance and you were lousy in sports, you were in serious trouble. You had to get a job. And alcoholics don't like jobs because they get in the way of their drinking. So I'm downtown one day and I see the big sign, travel. Foreign lands adventure. Oh, I go, yes, that's me. And it says, Uncle Sam wants you. I go, I don't know who Uncle Sam is, but I'm going to find out, man. That's going to be my guy. I'm going to find out who Uncle Sam is. So they go, call this number and come down to the recruiting office. So I signed, I called a number went down, signed up, and they said, Otis, you're going to get to travel and have fun. So here I go into the military, 17 years old, loving it. And the military was perfect, perfect. In the military, they don't like a soldier, they don't drink. Everybody drinks. If you're not an alcoholic before you go into the military, I guarantee you you'll be one when you get out. In the military, and then Vietnam was kicking off, the military is perfect. Everything I love, you could drink, gamble, and chase women, and even kill some people, and they wouldn't mind. I went, oh, man, this is crazy. And if you screw up, they just send you off to another platoon and move you around. Oh, everybody's crazy. Everybody's drinking. If you're going to die the next month, so do some drug. It was just crazy. So I did 8 years in the military, but then they got tired of me and told me that I had to get out because my behavior was even a little bit too much for them. So I returned home to Philadelphia. I got the same problem I had when I left 8 years ago. I got to get a job. And boy, you know, us and jobs don't go too well. So, then I got lucky. I found the perfect job for every alcoholic. Every alcoholic needs to have this job. I was able to secure a position as a bartender at the local pub in my neighborhood. Oh, you talk about a job that you need to die for. It is wonderful. And this was back in the day, in the 60s. That's when the bar was hopping and you had all the go-go girls and they had cages hanging in the bar with the go-go girls dancing in the cages with the spinning lights and whatever, and people's drinking. Oh, man. I mean, I didn't have to go to work until the afternoon, till about 3 or 4, get all set up. I knew at 5 o'clock, whoop, the whistle blow, here comes my group. One for you, two for me. We're drinking a little product on the side. Oh, I am living the life, man. You know, and the go-go girls love me because I'm throwing money at them, man. And things are good, except I have one serious problem. It's called cash flow. The cash flows out faster than it flows in. I'm always broke. I want somebody money, and it ain't going to work. So I go, oh, I know. I need me an Al-Anon lady. Oh, they know. I see my girl Zoe over there. Yeah, I go, I need an Al-Anon lady. The little Al-Anon lady comes in, little school teacher. And they, you know, Al-Anon, they love alcoholics. They say we have potential. So I meet her. We fall in love. You know how charismatic I am. And so we get set up housekeeping and oh, everything is good. And she's making a record paycheck and the cash flow is good again. But then she's kind of mad at me because I'm staying gone all the time and not getting home but late at night from the bar and stuff. So I decide, well, it's time to have a little family and that'll keep her busy. So we have a little girl, you know, Onyx, and so she's happy for a while. But that only lasts for a little while. Then she starts with the most dreaded thing of every alcoholic. I call it the Al-Anon yak. Yak, 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 yak. Where you going? Yak, yak, yak. When you coming home? Yak, yak. Where's the money? Yak, yak, yak. Who were you with? Yak, yak. Enough to make a man drink. I swear, man, it'll drive you to drinking. So she has the baby. She's fine. She says, honey, look, I'm going to stay home and take care of the baby. I want you to go out with your girlfriends and have fun. She says, okay, Otis, you promise you're going to take care of the kid? I go, yeah. So she gets all dolled up, goes out with her girlfriends. I look at Onyx, say, hey, Onyx, that's my little girl. I said, you want to go party with daddy? She said, oh, yeah, sure. You know, she's only one in the little crib there. She just, I'm saying, I know she meant yes. Yeah, I know she wants to hang out. So I get her in the little thing, you strap them in the little cradle thing, and I got it, you know, I get a little baby bag and a couple of diapers, a bottle of milk, a fifth of Jack Daniels, hey, a little bud on the side, little stuff to help me going, and off we go. Now, if you come into a bar with a baby, everybody loves you. All the girls going, oh, look at the baby, and you know, they're all that. I'm partying and drinking. I am going to get home before my wife, I know this, so she won't be mad at me. But you know how when you're having fun, time gets away from you. Boy, and when they blink the lights at the bar in Philly, that means it's past the midnight hour. Ooh, I know I'm in trouble. My wife's been calling every hospital, police station, every friend trying to find me, and I'm nowhere to be found. So me and my ignorance, craziness, I'm going to go to the speakeasy because I know if I go home, she's just going to be giving me the Al-Anon yak. So I go off to the speakeasy and finish the night off and get home like 4 or 5 in the morning. My wife is through. That's it. It's over. She's leaving. And I go, okay, you know, that's it. I'm through too. I'm out of here. I'm packing up. I'm moving down the road. There's wife number one gone. And so I'm going to go find wife number two. But I'm going to find somebody that drinks. You know, that'd be good. Somebody like, yeah, Aubrey. Yeah, I'm fine, Aubrey. Aubrey drinks. So we're good. So me and Aubrey hook up. We're doing really great together because she likes to drink. I like to drink. We're having fun. So I says, Aubrey, now I got to go make a few sales and drop some stuff off. Now here's the alcohol over here. All the booze there. And there's my little bud, you know, keep the stashes down there. You know, and there's a little, you know, probably enough. That stuff I got to move later on. So you watch that while I go make a run and generate some cash. So I go out, make my run, do my little sales, get up. I come back. Aubrey's on the couch, passed out. I go, what's wrong? I look over there. She done drank all the liquor, smoked up all the dope, and did all the coke. I said, I'm going to kill you, Aubrey. What are you doing? Oh. I almost was going back to Stephanie, but I go, no. I can get some more dope. I can get some more alcohol. So whatever. So everybody's after me. I'm in serious trouble. So I go, okay, it's time for a geographic. I got some friends out here in California on the coast. So I'm going to do a geographic to California. I call my brothers up in Compton. They tell me, come on out. I swoop out to Compton. Oh, things are good. The sun is shining. Oh, you got single houses, grass, real grass on the sidewalk. I go, they got grass in California. I go, oh man, this is unbelievable. So I am on my way to California. I'm going to, and I call my wife and say, honey, you know, pack up. We're going to California because life is going to be great. I need some light. Oh yeah, I had to go where some more light was. It was getting dark out there. So I'm out here in Cali and I call my girlfriend. I said, honey, you know, pack up the stuff. We're going to the coast. Life's gonna be good. So here I go. I get out to Cali in the Compton. I go, honey, you know, the first thing we gotta do, we gotta get you a job. Yeah, she, oh yeah, honey, I go, good. So she found this job at UCI Irvine. I have no idea where that is. But I know it's a little ways from Compton, but that's even great because she leaves in the morning early. She goes down to Irvine. I know she gets home around 5:30, 6 o'clock. I'm back at home, dinner, put her to bed, and I go out and party all night long, and then I can come back in and get her up when she's off to work. Life is going good. You know, I'm doing a little dealing. I'm drinking. Things are good. She comes home complaining, saying, that's it. I'm quitting. It's too far. I'm not making that drive. I go, honey, we can move. She said, move? Yeah, we can move down to Irvine. No problem. Newport Beach. So I told my homies in Compton, man, and, you know, this is in 1976. You know, I'm moving to Newport Beach, bro. I'm going down to Irvine, California. They go, Otis, we don't think that's a good idea, bro. All the Republicans are down there, and there ain't a whole lot of brothers in Newport Beach. And I go, don't bother me. There ain't nobody gonna bother me. I've been around the world. So I pack up and I straight out of Compton. Here I arrive in Newport Beach, Irvine, California. Oh boy, little did I know it was the beginning of the end. Cause now, you know, my shenanigans in Compton was normal. Boy, I get down here. You know, I'm drinking and carrying on and being crazy. And woo, here comes the lights start, them little red and blue lights, blinkety blink start coming on. The police pull me over and they go, could we see your driver's license and stuff? And I go, yeah, guys. I mean, what's the problem? They go, we noticed you were weaving a little bit. Have you been drinking? And I go, well, it's Friday night, right? They go, yeah, but I go, well, of course I've been drinking. It's Friday night. They said, well, how much have you been drinking, Mr. Johnson? I go, I'm not counting them. I'm drinking them. You know, who cares? I don't. They go, well, we're going to have to ask you to do a field sobriety test. I'm complaining. I go, look, I got women waiting on me. I got places to go. I don't have time for this. They go, Mr. Young, if you just get out the car, do a simple sobriety test, we'll let you go. So I get out of the car, you know, and they say, okay, they stand me up. They say, we want you to walk down this line, you know, and turn around on the line and walk back down the line. If you can do that and stay on the line, then we'll let you go. I go, oh yeah. I go, good. So you want me to walk down the line? They go, right. So I look down at the ground. I go, walk down the line. They go, yeah. I go, walk down the line. They go, yes, walk down the line. I said, what line? Is there a line down there? I couldn't see a line if my life depended on it. And then they said the bad news. Well, Mr. Johnson, according to Vehicle Code 23105A, we are going to arrest you for driving under the influence. And it's a little Newport Beach cop. Little small, little, I could do. I go, dude, you ain't locking me up. I'm a big 6 foot, you know, two brother. You ain't locking me up. And he started smiling. I go, what is he smiling about? He went, hey, Joe, we got one. I go, who the heck is Joe? I turned around. I saw this 9 foot gorilla get out of the car. I went, oh my God, I'm going to jail tonight. So, hey, handcuffs back of the vehicle. They throw me in there, man. Take me down, lock me up, Orange County Jail. I'm in there screaming about I want Effie Bailey and my lawyers to get me out. And, you know, this is ridiculous. They told me if I don't shut up, man, and be quiet, they're going to come in there and put me to sleep. So, of course, they kicked me out on OR, you know, and give me a court date and whatever. And so I leave and I ain't going to go to no darn court. But of course, I'm out there doing the same thing I was doing before, you know. I'm out there, you know, drinking, kind on. And if you keep on doing what you're doing, you keep on getting the same results. They know me now. They go, hey, they start blowing on. Hey, Otis, how you doing? I go, oh, no, not again tonight. They go, Otis, you know the drill? I go, not tonight. They go, you know the drill. Because we already know you're drinking. And they say, do we have to call Joe? I go, no. Leave Joe in the damn car, in the car. I don't need Joe. So after about my second or third arrest, I am thoroughly convinced. I'm talking to my homeboy. I go, I know why I'm getting locked up and why I'm going to jail. The only reason I'm going to jail is because every police officer on the Newport Beach Police Department is a racist. I know this. They're racist. Like, they take a test, and one of the questions says, are you a racist? If you check the block, yes, they hire you on the spot. They don't even ask for no more qualifications. I know this. And I can't wait. So my friend says, oh, maybe it's not that they're so racist. Maybe it's your appearance. I go, my appearance. Well, this is 1970, you know, not. All brothers, if you were a brother, had an afro. I had the baddest afro you ever saw. I had this big afro, huge afro. And to get my afro right, I had to use this chemical to relax my hair to get poofed out, you know. So between the chemical and the relaxer in my hair and the California sunshine and the chlorine bleach in the pool, my afro was bright orange. I had this orange afro. I had these large gold hoops in my ears. I had this golden lavender dashiki, man, with bell bottoms, with marijuana leaves thrown in them, you know, and barefoot sandals. And I go, well, this is a typical Newport Beach attire, is it not? They go, oh, no. Oh, there's no one looks that way in Newport Beach, bro. I go, yeah, I'm still hippie from the 60s. I have, it's 70s, but I'm still in the 60s. You know, I haven't changed up much. And they go, okay, Otis, if it's not your attire, it's your car. It attracts attention. I go, my car? Man, Akron's car is sacred. I had this little Volkswagen Beetle. They brought them back, but in 79, they had this little Volkswagen Beetle. And of course, being rather colorful, but I had a canary yellow Volkswagen Beetle. Now, the only problem was I would go out partying at night, and I swear, I don't know what would happen, but I would get attacked. I would turn the corner. I would get attacked by the movable poles. The pole came off the sidewalk into my vehicle. I saw it move. It hit me. I didn't hit the pole. The pole hit me. And then I try to turn the corner, and two parked cars would move out. That the parked car would just move on its own. Boom, boom, boom. I would wake up and look at the survey, the damage of the movable poles in the car. Oh, my car was a wreck. I had all these dents in it. So I asked Jose, what can I do? Because and the salt air in Newport Beach, it was making it get a little rusty. He says, well, you got to knock it out and put some Bondo on it. Bondo. Go to Cheap Auto to give me some Bondo. So I went down to Cheap Auto for some Bondo. They said, we have the red Bondo and the gray Bondo. You know, call it for me, I want the red Bondo. So I get a big bucket of the red Bondo, and I put Bondo on this fender, Bondo on that fender, a Bondo on the hood, a Bondo on the side. And pretty soon I have the only canary yellow and red polka dot Volkswagen in the area. So now I'm ducking the police and I'm going through the little driveway and cutting behind the buildings, and I'm speeding along and I look up and there's a hill in front of me. You guys call them speed bumps, but they're doggone hills. I go flying over the hill, rip my tailpipe and muffler off. I mean, I'm coming dead off the headers. You can hear me before you see me. I'm roaring down Newport Beach Boulevard, a cloud of smoke, a canary yellow and polka dot Volkswagen with a brother with an orange afro, drunk out of my mind, cocaine running out my nose. And the only reason they're locking me up, because I'm black. I know this. And they go, Otis, you need help. I go to court. They go, Otis, you got two choices. You can go to jail, or you can go to Alcoholics Anonymous, because this is your third arrest. You've been screwing up. Jail or AA. Can I think about it for a minute? Can I go outside and have a minute to think about it? I go, oh, Otis, you know you don't like jail. There ain't no women in jail. You can't drink in jail. And this AA is called Alcoholics Anonymous. Maybe they have some alcohol over there. Because I'd never been to Alcoholics Anonymous. I go, well, you know, you might be able to get something to drink. But then I asked my friend, I go, man, have you heard about Alcoholics Anonymous? He says, oh, yeah. He says, well, Otis, you know, like in Africa, they have the elephant graveyard where all the elephants go to die so they can find ivory. Well, they go, AA is where all the honky winos go to die. You know, when they're three drinking, they go there. I go, oh, my God. I go, well, maybe that's better than jail. I'll give it a shot. So they give me my court card. I go to the Alano Club in Santa Ana on Main Street. It's this dingy looking building. And them days they smoked. You could see the smoke drifting out of the room, out of the windows and stuff. I go, ooh, man, I think there's some bats and stuff in there. I go, oh my God. So I cut through the smoke and I get into the meeting, and there the first thing I see is them two honky winos sitting at the table, shaking, drinking coffee, smoking cigarettes. I went, oh, this is not gonna be good. And I go, where's the AA meeting? They go, well, it's inside, Sonny. So I go inside, and it's not too bad. I see you guys. You know, it's fairly normal. I go, hey, this is not too bad. I mean, it's not all hunky winos. So you guys come in. So I just, I'm going to do what they do and, do, you know, get my stuff and get out of here. So I hear them start talking about the steps. I go, ooh, I'm going to find out where the steps are. They say, because you got to do the steps to get through the program. I'm going to find out where these steps are so I can get out of here. And then I hear him talking about God. I'm like, oh, man, this might be like John Jones, one of them cults. I ain't drinking no coffee, man. No, they may have something in it, man. But then they were saying, you know, they were cussing too much, though, to be a Christian cult. I go, well, maybe they're a different kind of cult because they cuss a lot in this meeting. So I'm in there doing the deal, and I only got 5 minutes more to go. But believe it or not, they started sharing, and I cannot believe the stuff that they're telling on themselves. And I'm going, I don't know why anybody would do that. And then, you know, they would share about how they lost everything. Their wife left the dog, and everyone would clap their hands and go, oh, yeah. And they were all laughing and having fun. And I go, how could these people be laughing and having fun? I couldn't understand it. So I went home. I said, well, how was your AA meeting? I go, honey, if you think Days of Your Lives, As the World Turns, General Hospital got some stories, yeah, nothing compared to AA. And I go, but it's interesting. I could relate. I went there for the first time. You guys were laughing. That's what I couldn't believe. You guys were laughing and having fun. I go, how do you laugh and have fun and not drink? I mean, to me, I was mesmerized. I wanted to find out how I could possibly do that. And they said, well, Otis, you know, if you come to meetings, read this little book here, get a sponsor, work the steps, you know, you're going to get, you know, it's going to, you know, all work out. They said, but you got to make the coffee and empty the ashtrays and help set up the chairs. And I went, oh, man, that's more black servitude. I ain't doing that stuff. They go, well, you don't do it, you ain't going to get sober. I go, okay, I'll do it. But I did what they told me. I knew I was going to drink when I got my card signed and I could leave. But something happened along the way. I mean, the obsession to drink went away. I go, it'll be back. I know it's going to come back. I'm not going to worry about it. I'm going to just keep doing everything they tell me to do. They said, okay, well, you got to sponsor somebody. You got to give people rides. You got to go to the pantry, help feed the poor people and do the other stuff. And you got to get a job. I really got a job. They made me go back to school. I had to go back to school. Oh, I become an alcohol and drug counselor. And oh, man. But when I found out they paid you money to talk to people, I died and went to heaven. I go, well, I'll never have to work again because I love talking to people. Sucks. So I talked to alcoholics and they give me money. I talked to Aubrey and, you know, and Stephanie and they pay me cash. I was in the IOP program where she came. I love that. I don't know. My life is unbelievable. I live in another world. Rocket to the fourth dimension, and it's all a result. I go to meetings, you know, I be a service, I help some newcomers out, sponsor some people, do what they tell me to do. 41 years later, I never had to go out and drink again. I tell anybody, you know, if you come to AA, you don't have to drink. You're home. And here's the thing that happens. If you come to AA, you're going to experience what I have. You're going to help another alcoholic and they're going to look at you and go, thank you for saving my life. And you will never be the same again. Never. Your whole world's going to turn upside down. To think your experience, strength, and hope can save another person's life. And that's what we do for each other. I'm the happiest guy in the world. My life's been, I'm going to die in AA. I'm going to be sitting in a chair. I'm going to fall over dead. And they're going to call the coroner to get the body and just take him out of the AA meeting because that's where I'm going to die at. Because I'm never leaving. Never. I got nowhere else to go. And nobody else will put up with me but AA. So I'm a happy camper. I love you guys for putting up with my insanity. I don't have a great message except reach out and tell somebody you love them and give them a hug and you'll be okay. Because I love everybody in AA. And everybody loves me. I mean, yeah, that's why my life's so good. So you guys, you know, my newcomers, keep coming back. You'll find the magic like I did. And I like that rocket into the fourth dimension. I thought they won't give me a special drug, but I didn't know I had to read the book to get into the fourth dimension and find the higher power and God. But there is another dimension you get to go to if you stay in AA. Joe will tell you all about it. He knows about it. Yeah, Joe knows what's going on now. That's why he's staying, he's hanging around. He ain't running all over the country somewhere. Joe ain't no dummy. All right, guys, that's my last minute. And if no one told you that they love you today, the big O, Otis said, I love you madly. Be good to yourselves. And please have fun. Relax. Don't worry about the COVID-19. It can't kill us alcoholics. We're indestructible. Cockroaches in us will live forever. We ain't nothing going to make us. You can't kill an alcoholic. No, we're almost indestructible. All right. I love you guys. I'm out of here. And I'm going to let the meeting move on. Take care now. Bye-bye.
We celebrate 8 birthdays at this meeting. We define sobriety as freedom from alcohol, pills, pot, or anything that would affect you from the neck up. If your regular attendee of this meeting would like to take a cake with us, please email our scribe, Ann P., at birthdays@pacificgroupla.org.
Hi, everybody. Ann P., alcoholic. Make sure that when you email me, you let me know who your sponsor is so I can put it on the list. Thanks so much for letting me share. Thanks.
And please email her or put the request into me on the chat or before the meeting before 7:15. Otherwise, you'll have to wait until the following week to be recognized. We have several birthdays tonight. I'm going to read them off. But before I read them off, we went deep, deep into our reserve. And we got somebody to sing you happy birthday from America's Got Talent. Our birthday song is from ZM.
Hi, Z Montessori Alcoholic. Thank you, Marty. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday from PG. Happy birthday to you. Keep coming back.
Woo-hoo! All right, birthdays this week. We have Morgan B for 3 years, sponsored by Allie B. We have Bobby Joe A for 6 years, sponsored by Yvonne. Mike C for 17 years, sponsored by Lloyd S. Jacqueline T for 18 years, sponsored by Sharon C. Becky G for 26 years, also sponsored by Sharon C. Keith P, former secretary for 31 years, sponsored by Tim K. Leslie E, another former secretary for 35 years, sponsored by Pat Y. And Bill L for 45 years, and his sponsor in the past was Clancy I. Happy birthday to all of our birthday recipients. Underneath special announcements, this is a special acknowledgement tonight. It's not my drawing. It's the actual placard for our outgoing secretary. If you will, Morgan, unmute everybody. Let's give a thunderous round of applause to Duffy Inn, our outgoing secretary.
Duffy, we love you.
Each candle on your birthday cake. At the end of the year, this money is our contribution to AA organizations worldwide. If you wish to participate in this custom, please email our treasurer, Betty H, at treasurer@pacificgroupla.org. If you have any court cards,